All right, well, we're going to get started. I see plenty of new faces, so we'll start by going around and saying names. I'm Jeremy. I go to MSUE here. I book the room. This is Pete, who does everything else, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Yeah, I'm Pete. I just do whatever needs to be done and whatnot, so...
Fine.
What's that?
Nothing.
That's John over here.
I'm John. This is my main name.
Should we tell any more?
If you have a blog, say what it is. We'll go there. Mine's bobbyking.com. We'll continue on to Dave, right?
Yeah, I'm Dave. I'm a computer programmer.
Matt, first night here, just checking out. We've got a blog that we've talked about noise.com.
Who are you doing? Which way?
Larry Parkin, LarryParkin.com.
Kevin Sosowski, Dork Factor Fine. Ah, I can't talk. I have a blog too.
What is it?
I'm Tim, and I have a blog, but it's on MySpace, so I'm embarrassed. I can't say anything.
We'll find you, Chad. I've got that program. I'm a developer, and I have a blog.
I'm Ash, and I'm my name's Amy, I'm with him and her. I don't blog and I'm a liberator. So I don't really belong here at all.
I'm David and I'm a video editor.
I'm Jason and I'm an iOS web designer.
Nice. Oh, and I run rafterweb.net, and on August 5th, it'll be 10 years of blogging, so, anyway.
So, Larry, I think we'll turn it over to you right away.
Okay.
Yeah, Larry's going to talk about Silverlight. We're hoping Justin Kruger comes tonight. We're going to talk about Barcamp Milwaukee 2. Who here has or is familiar with Barcamp, or was that any of them we did last year, this year? Okay, so if you're not, you'll hear about it, and if you are, hopefully you can help us out.
1024 of
SN68. Anyone want to get online real quick?
Oh, and we are in.
Actually, you'll need to get online.
Okay.
Are you guys on?
Any mouse parts over there?
Oh,
it's a great start.
Throw this thing out. Get an iPhone.
So do I connect to the MSOE?
Yeah, just jump on there and there's a splash page that blocks you out for a minute.
If we can get a little bit back here too.
Okay.
That would be excellent.
Just go to the wooden puzzle.
Silverlight's original name.
Yeah, I can get into that story.
It's a great name.
WPFE, that one?
What was it? Windows Presentation
Framework Everywhere. Yeah.
Slash, the slash was important.
Actually, that's a very interesting story because normally with Microsoft, they have like really cool code names. Like they name, a lot of stuff after islands in Puget Sound or mountains in Vancouver.
I'm only familiar with Longhorn.
Yeah, so you know what Longhorn is?
A ski resort?
It's a bar.
A bar.
Yeah, so Windows XP's code name was Whistler.
Right.
And the next operating system was supposed to be Blackcomb. And those are two big mountains. There are ski resorts in there. And they, when they were talking about, okay, we're done with Whistler, now we're going to need to start working on Blackcomb, somebody actually said, well, we really need an interim release. And they said, well, the only thing between Whistler and Blackcomb is this bar called Longhorn. And they thought that, you know, it was going to be a, you know, 1 year, you know, just slap it out there kind of operating system, and we all know the history of that. So normally code names are very cool, and then when they go to production, they name it something stupid like whatever 2008. And by the way, I work for Microsoft, so I am intimately qualified to make fun of us.
Hey, Jeremy, does that screen like pull down? So you said anything?
Oh yeah. You have to pull the string to be in stuff.
I have to do it. I don't work here like you.
I don't work here.
I don't break it.
I have to pay to be here. I don't get paid. Good way to house.
Wow.
Yeah. I hate this classroom. I've never gotten higher than a B in this classroom.
You're scaring Larry.
Just the fact that he got an MSOE means me. Does that look okay, everybody? So,
do we want the lights off?
Yeah. So I was halfway through my story about, you know, the code names, and code names are always cool, and the product names are really terrible. With Silverlight, it's exactly the opposite. The code name was WPF/E, which was Windows Presentation Framework, everywhere. And they blew everyone away when they actually announced the code name, Silverlight. You know, because that actually sounds somewhat interesting, right? Not very descriptive, but, you know, it's got a little bit of a cool factor to it. By the way, that is the last cool name that you're ever going to hear. They're officially all taken. The next product name is going to have a gruntle sound. You know, like, ooh, you know. Because basically, you know, you can't put out anything without, you know, somebody calling me a trademark violation these days. But, so are you familiar with Silverlight?
About the name, and that's about it.
Okay. Anybody here familiar with Silverlight? I'm sure somebody knows more about it than I do.
Oh, good.
Nobody's going to be able to call me out. What Silverlight is it's a runtime environment that lives in the browser that you're able to build rich internet applications with. And what that basically means is that you can do things that you can't do in HTML, the DOM, and JavaScript. Somebody's going to ask, you know, when we start looking at this, well, is this just Flash? And Flash is a rich internet application platform, and so is Silverlight. And so there's some things that they both, you know, have overlap with, but there's definitely some differentiation between the two also. There's a guy who knows Flash. Hey, bud. So, you know, as I was saying, you know, Silverlight is the Flash killer. No. you know, in all honesty, there's, you know, we'll get some tough questions, I'm sure, about, you know, how Flash and Silverlight compare. And, you know, in all honesty, there are things that you could do equally with both. There are things that Flash definitely does better. There are some things that, you know, we hope that Silverlight will do better than Flash. And really the key differentiator there is the programming model and, you know, where we would see the adoption from. But that's enough talk. Let me actually throw a couple of samples up here, you know, so you guys can actually see what Silverlight is. And let me start with the Surface demo. Everybody see those the cool Surface stuff from Microsoft? It's, you know, they've made a computer into a table and, you know, allowed you to interact with it. Well, the Surface product itself is actually using a technology called WPF, which has a lot of things in common with Silverlight. And one of them is this concept of a vector-based markup language called XAML. So after Surface came out, somebody said, well, hey, since there's some, you know, familiarity, some commonality between these two, why don't we like take one of the things that Surface does really well so we can demonstrate what Silverlight, you know, can do. And I don't know if you guys saw the video that they put the camera, the Bluetooth-enabled camera on the Surface, and the pictures just poured out of there, you know, all over the table, and you were able to kind of move them and stack them and group them and all that. And that's what they've done here with this Silverlight application. Is, let me grab one that can, they've actually got the pictures, and you can scale them, you can rotate them, you can file them, you know, it's not nearly as cool as actually pulling this off on a hardware device like the Surface does, but it really shows you kind of some of the stuff that you can do. There's very little code actually running on this. Most of it is XAML, and I'll show you a sample of what XAML looks like in a second. But this allows the user kind of, you know, the open palette to move stuff around. The other big components of Silverlight are media, you know, so sounds and graphics. This is a Silverlight piano, and I hope my volume's up enough. And I'm really awful at this. One of the guys I work with can actually do Mary Had a Little Lamb on this thing, but I'm not that talented. This is all, let me do the lights.
Sure.
Yeah. Because one of the things that it's really tough to see on the screen here is this is all vector-based markup. You can actually see the reflections in the, you know, the keys of, you know, the Microsoft Silverlight grand piano back there. It supports full, you know, keyboard and mouse interaction. It's also got an ink palette to it. There's another sample that I'm not going to pull up that actually shows a human being's arm, and you're actually able to draw tattoos, you know, with the ink surface. And all of that's kind of built into Silverlight itself. You don't need to, you know, there's no plug-in, there's no coding for it. You just kind of get the ink surface, you know, out of the chute. The other big portion of the media, other than the sound, is... Wow, there's something with my scrolling. I mean... Is it actually supports... right now, this is DVD quality video, you know, running in the browser itself. The release version is going to support up to 720p, you know, high def quality. Yes, sir.
Is that WMV?
Yes and no. So WMV is one of the formats it supports. There's actually, and I'm not a video guy by any means. There's actually a wrapper technology, kind of like MP4 is. That's the actual format that Silverlight supports. So WMV is one of the formats you can put in there, but it also supports a couple other ones. From a sound standpoint, of course, it supports WMA and MP3, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I can't tell you the actual encoding rate of this one, because I'm just not that smart. But, you know, you can see it's a pretty high-quality video. What's neat about this is, you know, some of the animation effects here and some of the chapter stuff that you can do, you know, right out of the box with it. It supports both downloaded media and streaming media, you know, so both of them work, you know, and kind of your business model, which one's better for you. Most people who host video are, of course, going to go with the streaming model, because if somebody abandons the video halfway through, you have to pay the download cost. And it supports full screen. Let me stop that before it gets annoying. Or too late, right? So there's, hey Justin.
Hey, Larry.
How you going? So there's two big components to Silverlight 1.1. One of which is the XAML language, which is, like I've said a couple times, is the vector-based XML language that allows you to do all the graphic work with it. The other component is the actual programming model. And it supports two programming models, one that's based on JavaScript, not ActionScript, but actual true JavaScript, and the other one that actually supports the .NET Framework runtime. And this is kind of something that's really tough to kind of get your hands around, you know, the first couple times you hear it. It's not the .NET Framework that, like, you get and you install on your Windows box. It's actually an optimized version of the .NET Framework that lives in the Silverlight plugin. Silverlight, to answer the Mac question, Pete. Actually is cross-browser, cross-platform. So there is a version of the Silverlight runtime that runs on OS X, mm-hmm. and there's one that runs on Windows. It also supports...
And there's one that runs on Linux.
Yeah, well, I'll mention that one in a second. Good point, though. So it'll run on all the newer versions of all the major browsers. IE, Firefox, Opera, and Safari. And in case you guys were wondering, yes, I'm running this in Firefox. My standard joke is that after I do all my little samples of it, I actually take it, open IE, and say, okay, if you guys were concerned, don't worry, it does work in IE also.
I actually was concerned about that.
You were concerned, yeah, you know, that we wouldn't support IE. So.
No, but anything would work right in IE.
It's those two guys from the Muppet Show, you know, in one. So this is a hit. So this is a little a sample app that shows the, you know, the vector-based, you know, graphic formats of it. And you guys can probably explain, you know, vector a lot better than I can. You know, it's the mathematical representation that scales out and down, you know, absolutely, you know, perfectly. This is the bug logo, and it shows the XAML, you know, underneath of it. I can zoom in and zoom out. By the way, I'm actually used to, like, 1600 by, not 1024, so some of these demos will look a little weird. And look at the coffee cup. This is the one where it zooms out really, really good. You can actually look at the bubbles, kind of center it, and you can zoom in and you get no resolution loss because it's not a bitmap-based format, it's a vector-based format. So XAML does more than just describe the actual objects on the screen. It actually, you know, has behavior like animation built into it. And you can see here, these are some simple animations that say, you know, throw up some colored boxes, make them different sizes, and make them move across the screen at a certain rate in a certain direction. The XAML, or the, excuse me, the Silverlight pad sample that I'm showing up, and by the way, everything I've shown right now is, you know, freely available on the internet. If you go to silverlight.net, you see the, there's a nice gallery site. We can actually, the way that they've designed this application is they've got the XAML on the web browser itself, and they've got the Silverlight canvas area on the top of it, so I can actually edit the XAML, hit refresh, and I can see, you know, the changes that I made in the XAML reflected on the top of the screen. So if I go down here and I say I don't like orange, I like purple, and that green box, let me make it twice as big and half as wide, and that yellow box, let me make that four times as big and twice as wide. And if I hit refresh, oh, I meant to hit load, not refresh. So let me just go down here quickly and come up with a couple of these and hit load. And you should see the changes reflected up there. So, you know, this is kind of the, it's called declarative, you know, markup language, so that you can actually, from a programming standpoint, you can use a lot of declarative syntax in order to make it work. You can also write code to do all this stuff, so it's not like you have to actually create it in the vector markup language. You can actually drive everything off of a database and all that and not have the XML, you know, representation of it.
Are they changing the layers there?
There are layers, but I don't think they're actually changing them in this, because you can see the yellow is always above the purple. Okay. That's something that you could add there. Oh, I forgot to mention Mono. Okay, so yeah, everybody, you know, so we covered all the major browsers, Firefox, IE, Opera, and Safari. And I mentioned Windows and the Mac. That's the official Microsoft support. There's a project that does an open source implementation of .NET for the Linux platform, and it's called the Mono Project. It's actually funded by Novell, and they get a lot of love from the Microsoft product team. You know, they get some, you know, early access to bits and things like that, and direction about where the company's headed. They've actually, so 21 days after Silverlight 1.1 was announced, which is the .NET runtime version of it, they actually released an implementation of that running on the Mono platform. It's actually called Moonlight, is their kind of equivalent of Silverlight. And they've said that they're going to be able to keep pace with what Silverlight does. Not the exact same release date, because they need time to kind of, you know, rework things that are done. But they've come out and said that they're going to support Silverlight running on Linux. The plugin, by the way, is for Silverlight 1.0, which is the JavaScript implementation, is about a 2 meg download. The 1.1, which is the .NET implementation, is going to be about a 4 meg download. So it's a little bigger than you know, the Flash player. Actually, four times as big, you know, but it's still within reason. It's not like you're having to download 50 meg or whatever. I want to ask, why would I run? Your buddy back there is not playing attention. Why would I want to do Soberlite when Flash has got like a 98% market share, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's a question that we get quite a bit, and I went ahead and planted it. You know, because Flash is Robert Prinley, who writes the tech column for PBS. He actually said that Flash is so invasive, it's so widespread, that it's actually become invisible. That you just absolutely, you know, if you walk up in a coffee shop, you know, to a kiosk that they've got configured to attach to the internet, you expect that Flash is going to be there. You know, he said that it's just that pervasive now that it's along the lines of, like, you know, Zip. You expect Zip on every platform. And I honestly believe that's kind of where Flash is that, you know, it's very rare that you're going to stumble on somebody who doesn't have Flash unless they are in a corporate lockdown type environment. You know, you can, as a designer, you still have the code for it. You still have this, you know, put the nice page that says, oops, you don't have Flash installed, click here to install it. Of course, Microsoft wants Silverlight to be in that same kind of, you know, pervasive distribution. Flash is like 98% right now. Silverlight, if they're lucky right now, has got like 1%. The plans are not to bundle it with an operating system push or anything like that. Microsoft gets in trouble, you know, when they bundle too many things together. That's the nicest way that I can comment on that. The plan is to work with major media companies, you know, to get them to adopt Silverlight, and therefore it'll become like almost like viral. And they're working with Major League Baseball has already signed up and said that they're going to, you know, support Silverlight on their properties. Also talking to the NFL, you know, the soccer leagues, you know, to really get a good base of companies that say that they're going to support Silverlight, so it's compelling for the end users to adopt it.
I've heard the biggest reason to use Silverlight right now is 720p video.
So 720p is one of the reasons to support it. The other thing is the media cost for the streaming, you know, for the server is built into a Windows platform. That's another reason, like Major League Baseball, who pushes a lot of video out, you know, they're looking at their cost to deliver that video out to their customers. Because they figured out the price point is like $14.95 is about what people will tolerate. When they raise the price above $14.95, they're gonna, you know, then they start losing subscribers. They don't gain many subscribers by dropping it down to $12.95. So they've got kind of a fixed revenue stream coming in from there. So they've got to deliver as much content for that as possible. Anyway, I want to show more technology. I've done that spiel enough. So there are two tools that you can use to generate Silverlight stuff with. And as cross-platform as Silverlight is, both of these tools right now are Windows-only tools. So you got to get the copy of
Parallels. Is that ever change, though?
What?
Is that ever going to change? So the only authoring tools that don't require Windows?
The Microsoft actual tools, no. But what they're doing is they're actually working with partners to have tools on other platforms.
Okay.
So for instance, because XAML is just XML markup, you can generate XML on any platform. There's a plugin now that you can get for Adobe Illustrator that will create a XAML representation of whatever you've illustrated. So if your designer is working on the Mac platform, you know, and they don't want to change, you know, most Mac people don't, you know, and actually most people who use Adobe Illustrator on the Mac, you know, they're staunch, right? You can have that designer do their work and the tools that they're familiar with and then just generate XAML. So from that standpoint, the Silverlight XAML specification is open. Anybody can use it. It's not controlled by a standards body at this time. That's definitely something that's, you know, a big desire for the standards body to endorse it and officially control it.
Right.
But for right now, the spec's open. There's no licensing required. There's no, you can't patent XML right now either, right? So you could, you know, create a tool on the Mac that would generate the XAML for you. What you don't, the one piece that you have to use the Windows platform now is actually if you want to compile the code, unless you want the mono mode, that should work also. So I guess that, you know, if you're willing to tolerate, you know, some tool differences and you know, kind of being a bolt-on, that you could do it completely cross-platform. Now, compiling, creating the XAML and compiling it is the only thing that's actually required in the whole stack. So if I was, if I had a Linux web server, I can host the Soberlite files because it's just HTML. It's just a DLL, which is actually intermediate language, and the actual XAML file itself. So I don't need a Microsoft Windows web server to host it. I don't need IE for the browser. I don't need Windows. So you really could, if you had a 2,000 person law firm that used Macs as their desktops, you could create Soberlite apps for all of your lawyers, for instance, never having Microsoft anywhere in the stack. So it's very open in that standpoint. The two tools, Visual Studio, you know, if you're familiar at all with .NET development, you know Visual Studio. It's going to be a first-class citizen in Visual Studio. So this is a beta of the next version. I can actually say file new project and actually create a Soberlite project, and it'll create the stub of the XAML for me, create the test project. It does a test HTML page. That's one of the things that it's easy to show that you're not using ASP.NET in the stack, because the actual test site is just HTML and a couple of JavaScript files. There is, pretty much it requires JavaScript, you know, to be enabled on the browser in order to work, because the JavaScript will actually instantiate the object for you via the Soberlite runtime. And the actual JavaScript that you have to write is... just about that long. You know, it's about, you know, 10 lines of JavaScript. And here's one of the coolest new features of Visual Studio is we actually have JavaScript IntelliSense now, you know, which is like, for a developer, it's like just fantastic. You'll also be able to step in and debug it. The XAML itself is just XML. By the way, there will be an actual designer so that you can drag and drop stuff on there. In this version, it's not quite there yet. If you want to have the true design experience right now, you would go with our other tool called Expression Blend. By the way, there's a free version of Visual Studio, and it will continue to be free, so you don't actually have to pay for it. Blend will be a paid product. It's about $400. What's the Flash Lux thing? Didn't that cost about the same? About $400 as a
dollar? $900 for Flash, and $1,000.
$1,000?
Yeah. Flex is going to be open source soon?
Yeah, Flex will be open source. You just want to do access to it.
I think Flex 2 is $400 without the charting.
Okay.
Six something.
So they're in the same kind of ballpark.
There's a number of SVG editors, though, that are free.
I'm opening up the wrong tool. I want to watch my time because I'm kind of talking more than I thought I was going to. So I was actually going to walk through. I'm a firm believer in when I'm learning a technology that I like to have a project, you know, associated with it. And my idea that I've got for an application right now is I'd like to make a, you know, Creative Commons-based virtual baseball card. So what I want to do is I want to have an actual baseball card that'll show up and actually pull, like, biographical information from the player from Wikipedia and actually go out and query Flickr for Creative Commons photos of, you know, the player so I can actually, you know, put those together in kind of a virtual baseball card. I'm a big baseball fan. Huge. So this is one I'm actually, so this is my kind of mock-up right now. This is a picture I took at Miller Park last year. My wife likes to point out that where our seats are, that I like to take pictures of the players. She says butts, I say jerseys, you know. But I like kind of the classic, on-deck thing. And what I did to create this was I actually created a Soberlite canvas that is about the size of a 400 by 350 photo, which is a standard size that you get on Flickr. And then I actually created several rectangles, rounded a couple corners, and then applied colors to them, and then Blend supports, you know, the normal design tools, the additive combined features of, you know, exclude overlap and all that. So I just stacked a few of the frames together and then just said, you know, put them together and then the picture kind of shone through. And that also let me, you know, treat the text object, you know, as something here. And let me go ahead and see if I can do a quick timeline for you. I'm actually going to start with the player's name. I'm going to say, make that 0% and then 1 second into it. And it uses a keyframe, you know, way of doing animation. At 1 second, I'm going to go ahead and say that that's 100% opacity. So over the course of 1 second, it should fade in. And let me go ahead and test that.
Oh.
This is what I get for not preparing. This up, if I'm lucky, the baseball card should appear, and then about 1 second. Of course, it didn't work. That was a little file format problem. That was my bad. I did a conversion earlier and didn't follow it through. But so the one of the key differentiators here is we've got two sets of tools. One that's more familiar to the designer, and that's the Blend product. And you can tell that it looks more like a tool that a designer uses. It's got the, you know, the phraseology that they're familiar with, you know, the tooling that they're used to. And then we've also got it supported, you know, inside Visual Studio. What's really cool about this is that you get a really good designer-developer handoff. You don't have the designer creating everything in a Photoshop, you know, style image and say, well, go create this, you know, in your web project, then the developer has to pull it off. The file that the designer creates actually sucks right into the developer tool so you can start writing code against it. And let me see if I can open one. Because my other demo went south, and I'll see if I can have a big finish here. Sample application is called Silverlight Airlines, and if you guys have ever used a travel site, you know, where you have to know like the names of this, you have to either spell the name of the city or use the airport code. You know, working like I do, I travel quite a bit. I travel at least once a month. I've actually become a part-time travel agent for myself because I have to use these web-based interfaces where I have to know, you know, all these complex things about travel. This kind of turns the whole concept of a travel-based interface, or user interface, you know, on its side. What this lets you do is, this is three different XAML pads, or XAML canvas areas. The map is separate from the calendar, which is separate from the itinerary display there. I'm able to actually, like I know that I'm going to go from Seattle to Atlanta, so I can actually just do a drag and drop, and it'll actually, you know, connect the two cities. And you can see that the cursor changed to a nice little airplane there. And then I can actually select, you know, when I want to travel, and it'll actually pull back. Here's the available flights, you know, between your two cities. And what it actually does is it displays it, you know, as an actual timeline. So I know if I have to be in Atlanta for a 7 o'clock meeting, there's only, you know, three of the four flights that are shown here, there's only one that'll actually get me to Atlanta, you know, in time. The other thing that it does is, you know, I like to avoid connections as much as possible, and that's why I'm very concerned about this whole AirTran buying Midwest Airlines thing, because I love the fact that with Midwest you can get everywhere. So this actually takes that into account. So as I hover on this, it'll actually show and animate the actual connections, you know, in this, you know, between the cities. And so you can see here's one that actually goes from Seattle to Milwaukee, Milwaukee to Chicago, Chicago to Atlanta. You know, that's a lot of time in the air. All this is done with code that's running in the Silverlight runtime in the browser, right? And to kind of show you that, and this is going to be my last thing, Pete, I told you I'd be 33 minutes.
I have questions, though. So.
Oh, that's fine. I'm actually going to put a breakpoint in this. So I'm going to tell Visual Studio to you know, debug the application. It's going to fire up the browser, and then when it actually hits this point of the code, it'll actually freeze execution and let me go back into Visual Studio and actually debug it line by line. And you can see that it actually popped back to the IDE. And now if I hit F5, and it's actually going to run through this thing a couple of times, and now it works. The advantage here, well, not the advantage, one of the things that you can actually do is if I had a Mac up here and they were connected via the network and I was able to create credentials on both of them that matched, is they've actually enabled remote cross-platform debugging with Silverlight. So if you had a problem with it running your code on the Mac, you can actually debug it from Visual Studio running on the PC, you know, on a separate box. You have the same question that I'm about to say, I think. Why would you need to debug it specifically on the Mac?
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent question. It's almost like
if they're identical.
So one of the things that you can do with Silverlight is you can interact with the rest of the page. And I don't see people jumping on, hey, the only thing I'm going to have on my website is a Silverlight application. That's all the things you're going to do with that. Silverlight initially is going to be like part of the page. You know, you're still going to have, you know, a nice Ajax interface kind of wrapped around it. So because you are interacting with the DOM, you know, that's one of the things that you can do with it. That's when you would need to have the specific cross-platform debugging is. I get some weird behavior running on Safari on the Mac or Firefox on the Mac, so I actually need to debug into that to see what's being passed between the page and Silverlight.
The two reasons people use Flash,
okay,
are one, it's cross-platform, which means it's the same code. So it runs once, runs anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The second reason people use Flash and not Ajax is because when you're producing widgets, a lot of people cut off the Ajax because it's insecure compared to Flash. And so if Silverlight requires Ajax to run,
no, it doesn't.
Does it require JavaScript?
It requires JavaScript to start the actual
plugin. You would never be able to initialize your widget on some of the page then because you're getting your JavaScript rejected.
Yeah, from what he said, I don't think widgets are what they're after. Sounds like they're after deals with major content creators.
That's fine.
You know, and widgets important? Do widgets make money? I don't know. Deals with Major League Baseball, they probably make Microsoft more money.
I'm using the word widget incorrectly.
Okay.
And I apologize for that because I forgot that widget is an overloaded term.
Yeah.
Because widget used to be what you sold in business school, right? But what I meant by damn it.
Oh, no.
He's in the 2%.
Wait, Flash is ubiquitous? What is that?
Yeah. but
just
jeez.
You could just install it.
So easy to get.
It'll take 2 seconds.
You could just install it.
Yeah.
By the way, this shows you that...
Totally shows you that on your Internet Explorer.
We have a Silverlight app that can install Flash.
Install it on Internet Explorer. It's so much easier.
Yeah. But Justin, to your point, are you saying that, you know, if you create Flash, you're not going to see any issues between the different platforms like he suggested there might be? with Silverlight things?
Except for IE getting sued by some open source activists so that they couldn't use their object tags.
That was one of those troll companies that buys patent.
But
that was very not open source. That was
it was
about.
Very political the reason they did it. It had nothing to do with money. And so now in IE, whenever you want to use Flash, if you don't use JavaScript, you have to click to activate.
And you just use SWF object to
right, but you can't use that on a lot of widget forms because like if you're gonna do it on a Google homepage, you can't really do just WS objects scenarios. If you're on MySpace, you can't do it. And so a lot of these places where widgets are becoming valuable, using JavaScript is not an option. Now, oddly enough, if you're on Google homepage and you're creating a widget, you can do JavaScript, but Google is going to take the JavaScript, change your variable names on the fly to hashed versions of it, and then execute it, so that it doesn't collide with any of the other JavaScript on the page.
So what I meant by widget was like this. You know, it's not an actual application running from a different site. It's just a part
right,
of...
Right, if you want to be the next YouTube, the 720p video, like, you can't do a Silverlight on MySpace. You can't roll virally that way. And Microsoft is cutting out a huge portion of the possible market.
But I wasn't talking about that.
But if Microsoft is creating a Flash killer, they need to have...
Before you got here, I personally said, this is not a Flash killer. This is just another entry in the rich internet application market. I firmly don't believe that Silverlight's going to kill Flash. And you can put that on your blog if you want. The Microsoft employees said that Silverlight will not kill Flash because it won't.
I think viral 720p video would be hot, and I don't see why Microsoft is not.
So we can talk about your widget idea because I think we've had email conversations about
we have other things we want to do. It's not 720p video, but the idea is high performance vector and performance graphics in a widget environment. And I don't understand why Microsoft didn't want to target that.
Well, and what Justin's so Justin and I have had some offline email conversations about this, that if you have a Silverlight application, there's a security limitation to it right now that you can only make HTTP requests back to the same server where that was served up from. And that is a, preventing...
There's not even a cross-domain XML policy option like there is with Flash. So with Flash, if you want to make a cross-domain request, the domain that you're making a request to has to say that it's authorized to send that request to the domain that the Flash object came from.
And this is still beta software, and like I said, it's high on their list to get cross-domain requests working.
They should just use cross-domain.xml.
Okay. I'll let the product team know about that.
But anyway, on to my question.
Yeah.
Is the main competition to... I know you've mentioned Flash many times. Is the main competition to what Silverlight is... Is it Adobe's Air? I mean, is Silverlight build desktop applications?
No.
Or not?
So the third tier of this, and if you look at Microsoft's full stack, on the far left you have, we create HTML and JavaScript, just like anybody can from the server side.
Mm.
In the middle is Silverlight. On the right-hand side is our full WPF implementation. And we talked about the code name for Silverlight was WPFE for everywhere. There's a WPF that is, it's also XAML based, but it has full 3D rendering. It doesn't run in the browser. It actually runs, on the bare iron of the Windows box, but it's not cross platform.
Okay.
So if you looked at Air is a cross platform, runtime.
Right.
Adobe integrated runtime. Right? That's what Air stands for.
Yeah.
So the difference there is WPF, because it's Windows Presentation Framework, only runs on, Windows boxes. And that's kind of the Air equivalent,
okay.
Air apparent.
All right.
I thought it was a funny joke. Do you have any other questions, or?
Actually, the bathroom's right down the hall.
I see Silverlight as a Java killer.
Well, that's the other thing I thought of, too, is it seems very reminiscent of Java, where there were the applets kind of running in the browser. Well, I thought it was like between Air and Silverlight, where there's applets in the browser. There's also the desktop component of Java. And we know Microsoft and Sun have never really gotten along when it came to Java, so.
I don't know, because I never thought about it from the, you know, how does it stack up against Java applets, because I thought Java applets were, you know, at this point confined to intranets where you had control over the user's desktop, and you could be sure that they had the 3.42 version of the runtime distributed by IBM as opposed to...
The thing, Larry, is that the dollars right now are in viral marketing processes, and if Silverlight's restricted to a single domain, like... It doesn't create a viral prospect,
and like I told you, it's right now, it is restricted to the single domain, and I never got to finish the explanation, because it's so if you want to make an HTTP request from Silverlight, it has to go back to the same domain, because you can pull RSS feeds, you can pull WSDL based web services, you can do REST based calls, you can just open up an HTTP channel and pull it back. But it's got to be from the domain that served to that. And that's a security band-aid, so you don't have your data, going to a web server in the Philippines. They're working on, lifting that limitation. So right now, if you wanted to call the Flickr.net web service, you have to first call the server side and then call Flickr and then thump the results back. Yes, I know that.
Besides Justin and myself, anyone else have any questions?
Is there going to be controls, like combo box type controls and stuff, something to be standardized?
Yeah, great question. So right now what you see is the basic shape kind of palette. There's not even a button, and this is like pre-beta right now. This is actually, they're calling it an alpha right now. The product team has stepped up to say, yes, the basic controls like buttons we're going to put in there, so you get all that behavior. Third-party vendors have already said, we will create the more advanced controls. So a data grid, combo boxes, all that kind of stuff. Infragistics is somebody who said that we're going to come out with a whole Silverlight suite. You get into an interesting situation about how much does Microsoft create and how much do they let this third-party market create, because the third-party really fills out the gap that the product team can't do. At the same time, you don't want to have all these companies invest, in great Silverlight controls, and then Microsoft come out with ones that just destroy your market. So there's always a balance there. But definitely, you'll see more controls than rectangle, ellipse, line.
Does it need to buy those controls?
Some of them are free. Like Exceed has a data grid. Already that they've just said, here the market can have it, and it's issued under the permissive license, so you can use it, you can modify it, and then pass it on also. But yes, at some point, if somebody's investing a lot of controls, they're going to want some money.
Is there going to be an easy way to pull those plugins through
those plugins, the
additional controls?
Oh yeah, so if you never used like an Infragistics suite, it installs and it's integrated in with the IDE, it's drag and drop, it's full documentation integrated in with the help files. They do a really professional job with that kind of stuff. Yes, sir.
Was there going to be hosting for video on that?
And it's actually a different service. It's called Silverlight Streaming, where you're going to be able to host your files on Microsoft servers. And I think it's like under there's a file size limitation, and then there's a bandwidth limitation per month. Above that, you start paying for it. But if you were doing private video, not Major League Baseball type, you want everybody to look at it. If you're doing private type video, I doubt you would hit the numbers. I think it was each video was like 4 meg, and then there was like 10 gig of streaming per month or something like that. Below that, it's free. Above that, it starts costing you per gigabyte. So that, I'm not as familiar with that, because that's actually part of the Windows Live set of services. So it's just like you can use the virtual Earth maps on your site. It's kind of in that thing.
Gotcha.
Good question. I should have probably mentioned it too.
Anybody else?
I have a question.
Yeah.
The Silverlight
I guess the app is loaded from that JavaScript. Does that JavaScript just look to see if the browser is currently supporting a specific version? I mean, is it possible that you could do away with the JavaScript and say do some other type of check?
I think, as Justin was alluding to, there was a patent dispute about the use of the object tag, you know, within IE, and Microsoft lost that suit. So that you have to, if you use them just an object tag, you actually have to do the, and you guys have probably been on sites where you see this, where you have to click to activate the control before it'll actually activate. I think you can do that with Silverlight, but the prescribed way is to use the Silverlight.js file that ships with the product.
It's like Swift object.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And it has functions in there that'll check to see if the version of the runtime supports the XAML that you're trying to load into it. And so all that's done for you. You just basically say, I'm instantiating this, and you know it has functions to do all that internal checking to make sure it's up to date, all that kind of stuff. Among a version or within a version, there's auto updating. So if there was a security issue or something like that, that the first time that it comes up, it would check and it would actually pull down the updates like that. Between versions, they haven't really worked out if you have 1.0 installed and you go to a site that requires 1.1, whether they're going to prompt you or they're going to do an auto update for that. I think that they'll side on the fact that they want the user to have more control, so that they would say you need to get the 1.1 version of Silverlight. But that's not been finalized yet. That's my speculation that they'll ask the user before they do a major upgrade. Minor upgrade they'll do automatically for you.
Nobody else? Anybody else?
It's not working, right?
Yeah.
And any more questions? It's LarryClarkin.com is my blog. Larry.Clarkin@Microsoft.com. I'll be here pretty much every month too. So, if you guys have any questions, I'd love to hear from you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks. Thank you.
Well, since we talked before Larry started, it looks like a whole bunch of new people came in. So if you didn't kind of say who you were or what you are or whatever when we started, if you want to swing through and do it now, I think you're up.
My name's Eric Franz. I'm a software consultant. I specialize in presentation languages and frameworks. That's what I do.
Justin Kruger, software entrepreneur, working with these guys, that guy back there, a social networking, social gathering service called Social Helix. Like any entrepreneur, we're going to launch any day now. So I'm just waiting for stuff to get done so we can open it up.
Dennis Tebbio, software developer. All around that enough.
Kevin, hi, Andrew. I work with Jackson Design for Magazine. A lot of websites.
As your pretty boy task.
Well, a couple of soft drinks and clothing lines in Putnam Town, so it's really just about marketing and stuff like that.
My name is Terrell Morgan. I'm a graphic designer. I specialize in print media. Basically, like I said, I can do it. That's fine. I work at an advertising agency, Freeports Inc. downtown, and I also have a number of dealings with other entrepreneurial ventures and whatnot, clothing line, maybe some customized rims and steering wheels.
Downtown, Flash Development and PHP.
Brad, how about you?
Brad Willett, Dunning School for Web Design. Doing that because I don't plan on being in the state too long, so I have to do something unless I win the lottery down south. Because what I currently do, I can't do down south.
All right, do we?
I'm down for love. I just moved back to Texas. I've been walking from the other one.
I think we got everybody. For first timers, and there's a lot of them here. this is pretty much how we run things. Web forum works pretty informal. Meet once a month usually. Someone does a demo or presentation. Larry stepped up this time. In the past, Jeremy's done them. I've done them. Basically, we just whoever says they'll do it, we'll do it. We haven't really had too many outside folks, but we're totally open to that. We're pretty much not strict in anything we do. So that's fun.
Tuesdays work for everyone compared to Thursdays. There's a big thing with traffic downtown.
At least the next 2 months, yeah.
Until the end of September. Is there anyone that like Thursday is better for and they can't make it on Tuesday?
Yeah, we typically do the first Thursday, but summer's been really hard down here with jazz in the park. So.
For the second Tuesday, is that important for the formula?
First, second, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm open Tuesday, Thursday. It doesn't matter for me. So.
Once the new Bucket Works is up and going, they'll have parking on site, which will make things easy for everyone.
Okay.
And we should be welcome to have meetings there.
Okay. We're good. All right. But as far as the next 2 months, Tuesday, okay?
Yeah,
one time. Okay. Yeah,
we'll
yeah, it's good at least till.
Because people have been making having a voice tonight.
There you go.
I
think Jordan's the only one who said he couldn't make it tonight. I don't know why, but now we're all here, so. And on to, I guess, the subject of Bar Camp Milwaukee number 2. So, I think I asked before, but how about this time we raise our hand if you're not familiar with the Bar Camp idea, movement, or Bar Camp Milwaukee at all? Alright, anybody want to explain it to these people?
It's 35 hours of technology. If you sleep, you're missing out. During the wee hours of the morning, typically people throw mashups together. During the other hours, the whole session is talking about any sort of topic relating to technology, from surveillance to surveillance to Drupal to PHP to Silverlight to GPU hacking. Doesn't have to be web related. I'm hoping to get some robots there this year, doing some battles and the next Bucket Works. Anything tech related, and some have suggested that maybe we do a Friday night thing too. So maybe it's 48 hours.
Yeah, I basically think of like a tech conference where anything goes, anything that you can think of goes. We don't bring in big speakers from out of state, big companies. It's us talking about whatever the hell we know about. And a bunch of people in this room presented at either Bar Camp Milwaukee or Bar Camp Madison in the last year, just talking about what they know about. Because chances are you know something he doesn't know and vice versa. We try to make it totally free if we can. We try to get sponsors to pay for it, and we do a low-budget thing where, in Milwaukee at least, we did a potluck lunch, so we didn't have to raise money for that, and we just brought in a bunch of pizzas and next day subs. But pretty much we want to make it so you show up Saturday morning at like 10 a.m. We take care of you till whatever, 4 o'clock till Sunday. And I think we did that in Milwaukee pretty good. So there were people who were there the entire time. Just having fun, learning new things, meeting new people, and that's what we're after.
And it's different from a regular conference that you go to. A lot of tech conferences are one speaker speaking on a topic to an audience. This is a participatory model where the idea is you need to be either asking questions, helping someone, learning, or you need to go somewhere to do that. In other words, it's not like one person speaking to a bunch of people. It's a participatory thing. It's based on O'Reilly's Friends of O'Reilly Camp. Foo, and then
yeah.
Bar.
Yeah, okay, who gets Foo and Bar? All right.
Yeah.
Oh, we had to have it explained to them the first time.
Oh, they're dummy variables.
Yeah.
Right, but they're specifically related to process sharing or communication examples.
Well, it's actually derived from the Foo Bar back in World War II.
Yeah. Right.
Nerd alert.
Yeah, anyway, Foo Camp was an invitation-only kind of camp situation that O'Reilly threw, and a bunch of guys said, well, geez, you got to be invited. It doesn't really seem fair. I'll never get invited. So they said, let's open source it, throw it on, do our own. We'll call it Bar Camp. And that's pretty much how we got where we got. So anyway, planning.
You had mentioned the schedule, too.
Pretty much
the most conferences, do you show up and you know the schedule is pre-printed and all that.
Yeah.
This is
Figure it out when it starts or when you get there. Last year we did a lot of planning on the wiki as far as people proposing sessions and what they wanted to talk about. I did, I think, 3 last year. And since I was there for the whole 30 plus, I didn't care when I did them. I tried to do them when people were getting, asked for them. But, there was one, I think, Sunday at like 3 o'clock and there were like 3 people there. But, that's fine. It's pretty ad hoc. In Madison, I know I put up a session and there were 3 sessions up against mine that I really wanted to go to, so I actually moved mine. But it's as loose as we are here.
The advantage of not having a printed schedule, and I'm kind of disappointed that Minneapolis did this, is that when you have a printed schedule, everyone carries the printed schedule with them and they go, what's available? They look at the printed schedule and they go to it. When you don't have the printed schedule, that means that the event can change at any moment, and so it's real time. So the real advantage to BarCamp is that whatever is going on at that conference with all the people there that's important, that's what gets promoted. And so that's the stuff that ends up happening. And so the real-time nature of it is much more important than the fact that things are scheduled and planned.
Yeah, and really lets things evolve into, I think, in Madison and Milwaukee, I think there's a lot of interest in Ruby on Rails, and, within an hour there were 3 sessions back to back on how to get into that. So again, it's really what people are interested in, what people are gung-ho about doing. So is everyone going?
Everybody.
When is it, Pete?
I'm hoping it's the last weekend in September again, like last year.
Yeah, I like that because air conditioning isn't as important then. The one big challenge that we're going to have this year, because everyone was complaining that we didn't have it, and so it's on everybody's responsibility to get it, is good bandwidth.
Yeah.
And I don't want bandwidth that we have to spend $10,000 to get. I want bandwidth that we somehow beg, borrow, or steal. And so that's the mission of everybody in this room, to find a way to beg, borrow, and steal some bandwidth at the convention to make it work. Time Warner a number of times has said that they're willing to offer it to us, but they don't. They always come up with an excuse and they don't know how to get it there. And so James Carlson is always thinking, and after I showed him the DEF CON site, he was like, well, we should have a Wi-Fi shootout competition to like get Time Warner bandwidth over the new bucket works. And so if someone here wants to do Wi-Fi broadcasting between Time Warner and coordinate that, go for it. We need to have as many threads on that as possible, because something that we didn't pull off last year, and at this point we're just going to have DSL.
Yeah, the network was extremely spotty, so we kind of asked people, refrain from, downloading Linux distros and this and that, because some people might need that bandwidth for their presentation or whatever.
Now, something that we might do, and we need a month's notice for it, is we might say, hey, let's get TDS Metrocom or AT&T DSL connections broadly in the building, because there's no contract, and so get them for a month and then get rid of them.
Option. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think our big challenge last year was really bandwidth was one of them. As far as sponsorships, we were looking for companies to sponsor, I think, at $200. We took a bunch at $100 just because that's all we could get. We managed to make enough to pretty much feed everybody. And
T-shirts.
Yes.
Donations that I was welcome to.
Yeah, and I don't know if Bucket Works really got anything.
Better ownership of how we manage the finances, because it sounds like some people didn't get paid and other people took a couple months.
Yeah.
And so I want to make sure that all of our debts are paid within like 3 days of the event.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
This is a community-owned event, so anyone at a time can speak up and take the floor. It's a big thing here.
Is there anybody here that helps plan Madison? I don't know. I mean, I know a couple people here that went to Madison, but Madison, I think, moved really smoothly. As participants, as far as I could tell, I mean, if we could get some of that input too.
Do you think it went more smoothly than Milwaukee?
No, because I helped plan Madison, I think. I think it's about a zero-sum game between what Madison did well and Milwaukee did well.
I mean, Madison obviously learned from Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
That's a big thing.
And also, it's going to be fun to see in the Buckler space, because that
The hotel just, it was kind of a plus for compared to what Buffalo was.
Yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, we have about twice or three times the space that we did last year for Park Inn. So I expect us to fill it twice or three times the number of people.
Larger, more.
We moved several tons worth of stuff last weekend. We're going to move a few tons worth of stuff this coming weekend. And there are going to be performances and events happening by the end of this month. In terms of network infrastructure, I've talked to James, and we're more than welcome to use the space overnight all weekend for a LAN party. The only thing we have to pay back is to build him a network. So,
well, we talked about doing it last time.
Right. So we just got to run some cable, bring a couple of boxes of Cat 5.
Yeah, and BucketWorks has been a great kind of partner with us last year and this year as far as being a venue. So we're trying to help them out too as far as their technology needs and anything else we can do to promote them. So.
Is the Tech Cap, is that Computer Cafe coming with?
The Quasi Cafe is coming with.
Okay.
So that's going to be there. Speaking of Tech Cafe, I'd like to start every Saturday morning from like 9 a.m. breakfast. Then 10 a.m. like start talking about tech, and then by noon you're at lunch already. So the idea is just get there early, talk about technology. I'd like different user groups in Milwaukee to commit to kind of being there on that Saturday. So maybe one Saturday you have a whole bunch of Drupal experts, another Saturday you might have Joomla or Second Life or Linux user group or Soberlight experts or Flash, or like you just kind of spread it around, and we've got 52 Saturdays throughout the year that you can kind of have people gathering at the cafe and kind of make it really cool. Tokyo had something called a Linux Cafe, and I wish we could have a 24/7 Linux Cafe in Milwaukee, but I think the MLUG is a little bit behind Tokyo right now, so we're going to have to light a fire under their asses.
Yeah, and speaking of, is anybody here a member of any other like user groups, technology related? There's some like MLUG people here. But if you are, please feel free to kind of pitch this to them too. I know we invited a lot of different user groups last year to kind of come and talk about what they're into, promote their stuff. Some we got to zero response, they didn't email us back. Some, you know, had said, yeah, we'll tell our people. Some came and had a good time. So that's the other thing, just telling people you know about this and promoting it. Obviously, we have certain needs, which are things like data projectors. For a few people say they'll bring a server, we need those.
I think we're going to be able to get some good sponsorship this year as the context.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to have a lot of Second Life stuff happen at Park Inn in relation to my new job. So I think my employer will be happy to promote that.
Yeah, if anyone here either has their own company or works for a company or knows someone who would be interested in sponsoring it, like we said, we're doing like 200. Is that what we're looking for?
Yeah, minimum 200, I think, this year. And then that'll get your name on a t-shirt and get you on the website and stuff like that. Anything above that doesn't get you special treatment.
Yeah, and what we said was, you know, if you're going to give us 2,000 or if you're going to give us 200, you're not getting a bigger logo name on top. It's all your sponsor. That's it. We want to keep it equal.
What are you guys doing for your t-shirts? You guys scheduled
out? Nope.
No, so last year.
We had a nice fall through option last year that worked out.
Yeah, we.
Depending on your quantity and how we're printing our response.
I think we did. Yeah, we did just under. We did just under 200 last year, and that was pretty good.
Yeah, because right now we're just using that basic MAC address until we get a larger space, or depending on the MAC address, but for now we can do easy short.
The guy you used was
just a matter of covering the t-shirt cost.
We did a two-color front, one-color back. And I've kind of floated the idea on the mailing list of, I know the bar camps have done this, saying, you know, if you want to register, it's $5. And that way we can kind of get that money up front to get the t-shirts. And we say, if you pre-register, you're getting the t-shirt at least as long as you show up. I don't know if anyone's opposed to that idea. I think it's a good one. I know a few people last year, or for Bar Camp Madison, said, can I just like donate money to it? And there, again, there wasn't really a way to do that.
The $5 is good, like, guarantee your size and to guarantee that you're
getting
shirts.
That was the
but then you might have like other shirts available on location, but you don't know if it's going to be your size or not.
Yeah, I mean, that.
Or
I think
we
that
just beg for donations when you come get your free shirt. Say if you register, these kid rights registration, and then if you go over there, you have to go to the beggar who's going to beg you for $5.
I would be really freaked out if we didn't have everything paid for by the time the event came through.
I understand.
But then again, we could send those $5 to Point Works and thank them for the space.
Exactly.
And right. I know Platform 4 helped sponsor Bark at Madison, and I think that, I mean, everybody who's been to Bark Camp here would totally be willing to donate again. But I think that setting something up to donate, farming, I mean, just lay down your work on the site, but I think that setting something up to be able to donate more, I mean, because if my donating $20 means, you know, we can get that much more bandwidth or whatever, I mean, I think a lot of people would be into that too.
Yeah. Yeah, for Webform 4, we honestly, I just took people's cash, and there were like 10 people who gave me money. I put it in the bank account for my company, and then my company wrote a check to whoever the hell I wrote, the hotel in Madison. And that worked. I don't know what we want to do this time as far as that. But
I'm going to talk to a CPA and see if it makes sense to just do an LLC to funnel stuff through.
Okay, and you're thinking not through BucketWorks is the good idea?
It might not be bad to have that for future reference too.
Right.
This would be able to easily get a bank account and be able to.
So I don't know if I'm going to set that up in fire seat and just do it that way, and then whoever wants to be involved. And
the only worry I have on that is, you know, if you want to be able to, one of the big problems with Milwaukee was like, CA wanted to sponsor, and they said we can't write a check, that'll take 6 to 8 weeks, and that was like 4 weeks
right,
out.
But we've got 3 months now or 4 months.
Right. But I'm saying, are you going to be able to get a bank account set up, all that stuff figured out, get a PayPal account set up by then and tied to your bank account?
You can do that in a week and a half.
Can you?
Yeah.
Well, all right, good.
So
we're good.
So as soon as I get an answer from my CPA about if it makes sense to, I mean, setting up a bank account's really easy. It's whether or not we want to have a legal entity that creates limited liability and yada, yada, yada. Like, because one of the things that's starting to get more and more popular for our camps is purchasing insurance for the event. Again, having a limited liability corporation.
Well, doesn't BucketWorks have event insurance? They hold events there all the time.
That's not important enough. What about date? Let's hammer out a date tonight. Does anyone have any objections?
The rumors are
playing
that weekend.
That's not a technical event, so
we can help them out.
Are there Cardinals in town?
Silver Light streams those games.
I would like to see September 29th and 30th. Saturday and Sunday.
Someone's at a Friday.
Are we doing a fish fry on Friday even?
We'll do something on Friday.
Yeah, are we going to open up early, or are we going to just do a pre-event like social style?
You're in charge of that. Can Ken be in charge of that? Everyone good with that?
That's fine.
Sure. I think the Friday night social events is great when you don't have sessions and you're just kind of drinking and social.
I agree as well.
I think sessions are like burning people out there.
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't want sessions.
It's a lot of fun going to Minnesota and drinking with everyone the night before and getting up to
the 21. I'll actually be 21. I can legally drink.
Happy to have you.
You won't make it to car camp.
Do we
have open Wi-Fi
here?
He logs you in.
Just step on the Madison Network.
Well, like you said, I would prefer September 29th and 30th. Anybody close to that?
I just don't know if there's any other conferences or events going on, so maybe we should say that that's our tentative date.
Yeah.
Everyone should do a check to see if they can find anything going on. That's a good idea.
Right.
Because I don't want to collide with another tech event.
Yep.
But between Chicago and
Minneapolis. So Adobe Max is in that time frame. But I think that's Monday through Friday.
Perfect. Come right after.
We'll wait to check.
Yeah. And the Brewers are right now.
Yeah.
I wasn't out there.
That's the last weekend of the season.
I've talked to a number of people at the Minnesota Bar Camp and the Chicago Bar Camp, and they're willing to travel to Milwaukee's next event.
Yeah.
So we could have a very large audience.
I think we got people from Iowa last time.
Yeah. That was kind of unintentional.
No, it was intentional. I invited them.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I invited people within, you know, 10 or 15 hours away.
So let's, I think maybe something constructive we were talking about, obviously bandwidth. Let's talk about things we liked, first of all, people out of Minnesota, or heard about Minnesota. What was something that you liked that you did that?
The Minnesota was really well executed. The only thing I didn't like was that they skipped leveraging
advance. Yeah, advanced. Absolutely. I didn't like that at all. That's not going to happen. So,
yes,
I like the fact
that
I
on the wiki?
Yeah.
We did too.
It was kind of...
Okay.
Website well, thing instead of
yeah, this time around, we'll either have the Social Helix calendar will either be done and working with Jeff Judge from Chicago, who's got a text messaging system. So we're going to try and show off like text messaging registration if you want to, and updates and things like that. And if you don't want to do that, it'll just be a projector that shows the wiki, that shows the event schedule. I like having a lot of spare rooms to go have ad hoc sessions in.
That's true. There was a lot of just breakout rooms.
Yeah.
I liked when the session maximums were under 20. So like you didn't have presentation level sessions.
Mm-hmm. That place is too small. So.
This is really small. Oh, up there.
Yeah.
So. But I did like when Jimmy Wills popped in at WordCamp Chicago. I thought that was really cool. About 2 years ago. So I'd like to try to bring some of those style surprises in.
Right. It was fun to have Henrik Hansen or whatever Ruby guy name was. And that was really fun, that keynote. To have an inventor of Ruby on Rails come in. But I think, kind of same kind of things. One thing I've thought about one more is maybe we do have our introductions at 10, but I think a feedback from Barcamp Madison as well was once that was done, we got around the room and we were already like, get to sessions. I would almost like to have a whole other buffer hour of just mingle time and have sessions start at like noon.
Yeah.
Because I would much rather have people ease in, talk to people, say, oh, you're going to this, everyone gets a feel of where everyone else is going.
Right.
You know, you take like the 10 to 11 to kind of do introductions and get sessions started, and you don't start like 12 or 12:30. And you really just really ease into it. And I think there was a real lack of camaraderie in Minnesota. It was just too packed.
Yeah, that allows you to like publicize your event though too. Like if you're going to do a session, sure. 2 hours, give you a chance to talk to people and see who's interested.
And you might find someone to team up with as well who's just as into it as you are once they help out with it. So
definitely.
I liked the 15-minute session link, and then you have like some time to get to the next session or like have a chat after the session instead of like at Matt's and it was
it's really easy to just say, you know, 9-10, you know, do them on the hour, but that is an issue.
Do like 20 minutes of overlap time?
Yeah, I know Milwaukee, you know, there are times I say, like, guys, you got to stop because someone else leaves the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the only issue is like, oh, there's a session at 10, there's one at 11:15, there's one at 12, just figuring out and dealing with that whole thing. I don't know if there's a good way to do that or not. 20 minutes later, I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe just giving kind of a really, really generous cushion. Okay. 20 minutes. I mean, like, have the session be over, you can hang over for 10 minutes, but you gotta be out of the room.
Sure.
By that, you get 10 minutes of fudge, but then you really gotta be out of the room, so we get 10 minutes of getting in and set, so the next person really has another 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, and sometimes there's some setup needed as well, as far as getting projectors and stuff.
So Adobe Max starts at Sunday,
right?
On the 30th.
Is anyone else going to that?
To what?
I think we're fine. Is it Adobe Max?
No. How are we doing the website? Are we doing the
Adobe Max channel?
I emailed Blake
earlier
this week and I haven't got anything back from
him,
but I think Blake and I are
going to. What would you want to do? Grant, what
about? Yeah.
Is there anything that anybody that was missing from Walking Madison in Chicago?
She's asking.
Is there anything that anybody thought was missing from like
Walking
Madison, Chicago,
Minnesota
that really needs to get into?
Madison
was in lunch.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, how many people left the hotel to go out and get lunch and then?
Yeah.
That was also, you mean on a Saturday?
Yeah, Madison. Yes.
Yeah, that's
I
so because
the potluck stuff, though. I think that's cool.
Right, because that keeps you. Well, the thing is, too, you're not in Madison and there's not 40 places within
my 4 o'clock. So that definitely didn't help. And it was also the people who were there, and sessions started right away. After I got done with the 11 o'clock session, people were like, I'm going to lunch. Right. I'm skipping the first two sessions. That happened, like, that. The first couple sessions were really lackluster. And then in the afternoon, after one, really, people got situated, the computers ding-dong, and then they're ready to go at 1 or 2.
Why the hour after the introductions to be a lunchtime?
Well, that should be 2 hours.
I think there should be food there. I don't think it should be lunchtime, though.
Yeah, maybe it should be an hour and a half then. It should be 11 o'clock, set up scheduling, or set up the board from 11 to 11:45, start serving lunch at 11:30, and carry lunch, and just don't start session until 1. And have people just be able to set up servers or troubleshoot Wi-Fi, or just,
yeah.
It's just there's, I think everyone will be, and if people want to break out and have an early session, fine, but nothing official is really going to get, the board won't start until maybe 1.
I think there should be a mashup board. That was kind of cool. We did that in Chicago. So anyone who wanted to do like a mashup or talk about hardcore tech details, Primitive Prairie, we had a list of those groups. And then you had your session groups that were listed separately. So if you wanted to find out who was doing this for the event.
I also like Boogie Fight. I think
that was awesome.
Super popular. I mean, I think that those kind of things are definitely
really fun. I now have built a relationship with 4 gaming companies in Wisconsin. And if we pick a date that's amiable to them, they should be there. And I should be able to get them to demo their wares.
Yeah, some bring computers too.
All of these game companies are pretty much just breaking even, so they're probably not going to do
they
that.
They got loaner boxes. They have plenty of loaner boxes.
Just have break protector.
Just have break
Frozen Codebase is supposed to have a Wii game ready soon, and they'll have an Xbox arcade, Xbox 360 arcade game ready. So we might be able to get a demo on that before it's launched.
Super.
And there were a bunch of DS people there that I know that.
Yeah,
IRC was a great thing.
Yeah, actually confused when she said we fight. We for Saturday in Madison was like 10 o'clock.
Saturday at 10.
Which is like end of the day, people are getting tired. We projected a Nintendo Wii on the wall. It was the boxing stuff. And we had people stand up in front of the room, watch the television while they kind of fought each other, and it's on the big screen. So it was kind of entertaining for the big crowd. And
bowling was
black. And we came up with some sort of crazy bracket where people fought and won.
Oh, yeah, we championship. Did 16.
That's pretty cool.
We want to advertise a little pickup at our Chicago friends from the train station.
Sure, absolutely.
Because I think they might reduce a barrier for entry.
What is it?
If we just have people take the Amtrak,
yeah, shuttle service,
and we grab them.
Yeah, absolutely.
If someone just has a van, and can I just be having
people? So we'll schedule a bus for the Amtrak for the Chicago people to go from Bucket Works to pick them up at Amtrak and then bring them to Bucket Works?
Yeah.
By busing people with their cars.
Yeah, people.
Yeah.
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 We're not going to like rent a bus.
Everyone picks people up.
Yeah.
Whoever, you know, wants to get in advance and say, at 6 o'clock, you're going to the airport, or I don't care.
All right, well, then we just need a taxi list or something that says, hey, I need from here to here.
And I know that there was a list that was kind of started for people at Madison who wanted to get a room and share. I mean, there was kind of something like floating around about, you know, do you want a room? And we can kind of do the
Should we get room blocks set up?
Before we start that, we should be able to show up at Bucket Works Saturday morning and stay there nonstop till the next day, 4 p.m. or whatever. And at least last year, we said upstairs, second floor, it's quiet. You want to sleep, go up there, pitch a tent, throw a sleep bag down, whatever. And plenty of people did that. So we never left. In Madison, it was at a hotel. So they kind of said, well, you can get a room, or you can find a room in the basement that we have and just land our table and sleep. So. But yeah, like we said, we don't want people to have to, you know, come from far away and say, oh, well, I want to be here tomorrow morning right away. I'm going to get a hotel room. Obviously, we're all somewhat local, I would think. But
a lot of us in Minnesota have got hotel rooms.
Yeah. Could you have stayed right there, though, without doing that? Or?
Not really. No.
Okay. Is that something we can do, though, at Bucket Works and say?
Sleeping there overnight is absolutely not a problem at Bucket Works.
Right.
James thoroughly enjoys giving people weird tours at 2 a.m. in the morning and all sorts of other stuff.
He won't have the baseball to give the tour with anymore.
Awesome.
The new Bucket Works is actually kind of laid out better for that because there's a lot more subdivision space. I still think, though, that people from Chicago who want to spend money, or people from Minnesota who might want to spend money on a room, And I think if we get hotel blocks, we can get a special rate.
Right.
They might have a booking date by September 1st or something.
Right.
So I don't think we get a lot of rooms in each of the hotels, but we might get a couple of rooms. We can kind of adjust the size of those boxes as they fill up.
I haven't been to the new
airport.
Bucket Works.
Are there hotels within
walking distance?
It's like 2 blocks from the old one, right?
It's on 6th and Delete. So within walking distance, if you were like on 6th in Wisconsin, there's the Hilton and then the main Grand Ave. Yeah, well, the Hyatt's on Kilbourne 4.
Does someone want to try to figure out, you know, look at the hotels close by, figure out like what the rates are, maybe recommend a couple, and you know, put on the wiki and say, here's a couple nearby,
yeah,
at a minimum.
Yeah.
I like to set up a map with stuff nearby, like the Amtrak station, yeah, how far it is, the hotels,
yeah,
where Bucket Works is. I mean, if you've never been to it, like, I've never really been to Madison, and I just ended up walking around to find stuff, so.
Yeah, maybe have a section of the wiki recommended local spots.
Hey,
even I think Yelp.
That you're
going to
did that.
Yelp. You know the yelp.com site?
Yeah.
That's
all from that stuff. But I mean, I figured you could set up a mind map thing on Google and pop a bunch
of them. So Pete, you're thinking the last week in September? Or the last
yeah,
week?
Yeah, the 29th and 30th, Saturday, Sunday. Pretty much the same as last year.
I don't see anything on that weekend right now.
Like Larry said, Adobe Max is in Chicago, but I say we left.
Oh, that's in Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
So you can get free flash products in Chicago on that weekend?
I don't work for Adobe. I can't tell you
thinking
that.
Thinking about CS3.
Why don't we get Adobe to sponsor parking?
We might be
able to some stuff.
That's a column. But they got CS3, like the entire suite for free in Adobe Max in San Francisco this year.
What is
yeah.
It called?
I can totally
to
get a free copy of CS3.
Alright.
We were talking about doing like the week by Madison. Does anyone else have any ideas about other kind of cool, a bunch of people in one place, synergistic idea?
Table of Three comes out really cool. Is the date going to get pushed?
No, that's what's coming out.
What were the games that we played last
time? Alright, who's got an Xbox 360?
Let's just be
one
call.
We've got one that's messed up.
So we've got three boxes. Is that network playable?
Yeah, a little.
And then you can get the home of the future?
The digital lifestyle booth. I can get it.
How much space does that take up?
10 by 10.
And it comes with a high-def TV, Xbox 360.
It's got the plasma TV, the Dell Showstopper, and a Xbox 360.
So that's four Xboxes. So that's a 4x4 tournament on a
4x4x4x4.
Here's my question. I mean, obviously, you know, the Wii Fight, we used your Nintendo Wii. And it was easy and intimate setup, but it would have been great to, you know, have some company sponsor that. We have a Nintendo sponsor. I like the gun.
Well, it sounds like Larry might be
a sponsor. Oh, it sounds like Larry
sponsor.
Yeah. Well, we'll kick on the first sponsor.
Yeah. Yeah, but like you were saying,
at $200, you know.
Well, for you, it's $1,000.
They're going to be five logos on that
shirt. Last year, they put a logo on it, Larry.
You
should have not just put the logo on the t-shirt.
Yeah, we've been.
Okay.
Which was fine with me.
We were nagging Microsoft. I feel like we want to put the logo on there.
No,
we
weren't
nagging.
I was.
Are you sure?
I was.
I wore
that shirt.
People are
like, oh man, I missed the free drinking festival.
And then
everybody was laughing last week.
I need to explain the
place.
You
know what's happening about this stuff, teaching stuff.
The other really big things are, I know Kevin worked really hard on this for Madison, is word of mouth. Like, I would have never heard about working at all.
Yeah,
I had a big debate back in the day talking about it at the pre-Lebcorn.
I think the first rule of our camp is to blog about it, and then the second rule of our camp is to blog about it. So.
But I invited a bunch of people who ended up coming that weren't even really. I mean, one of my husband's best friends is not even really a techie. He's just like think that, I mean, even those people that are kind of, you know, not necessarily into the immediate
vaccine. Yeah, honestly, for Milwaukee last year at this time,
we were awesome.
I tracked down everyone I could, like, in the state or even in Chicago, who had a blog or a MySpace page or whatever and seemed interested in technology or software or whatever, anything. And just emailed them and said, hey, I don't know if you've ever heard of Barcamp or I went to Milwaukee. And just personally invited them. I mean, that's why, like, Scott from Iowa came. I think Jeremy found out about it because I told Doc Searles, who mentioned it on his blog, and Jeremy's like, you know, Doc Searles was like, oh, it's not too far from where I am.
He did
in
a
Iowa.
Fantastic job on that last year. We were getting 200 hits a day on the Barcamp Milwaukee site. Mm. And when you search for Barcamp on Google, Barcamp Milwaukee was the number one hit above Barcamp.org. So we did our job last year. This year it's going to be a little bit harder because there's been Barcamps that have been the size of 1,000. So just keep that in mind when we're
blogging. I don't care as much about size, though. I mean,
no, I don't either. After being cramped in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Gladwell says you can't go above 150.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
yeah, absolutely.
People are interested and excited about it. I don't care if it's, 100 or 200.
Well, I'm just saying, like, in terms of the PR mechanism, it's going to be a lot harder to rank higher on Google this year than it was last year.
I'm more interested in kind of, I mean, obviously, we both talked to, like, the media a bit last year. I'm more interested in, like, maybe building that up because it'll help with the sponsorship.
David's already offered to do the video again this year. David, I can't pronounce his last name, it's on our cable box. Last year he did a video.
I never saw the video.
I never saw it either.
He never gave it to us, so.
We never got one.
That was useless to me.
All right, no.
We were up in Scott's on the end of the
channel. But my video from Madison was pretty damn popular. The weed fights.
Well, we need to have some YouTube videos put up, and maybe I can put that up now if it's not running on demand anymore. But David had asked for us not to put it up on YouTube.
So what?
Because we were allowed to share the DVD that way, but he would ask us not to put that on YouTube.
I'd be happy to shoot some videos too if you want.
Oh, cool.
And I'll let you put them up. Also, I've got my DJ rig. I want a reason to bring it and set it up.
You say DJ rig?
Yeah. DJ.
I was kicking around the idea of doing something with like digital art or you know electronic music this year.
Sam's got a DJ lights that lights and bounce the beat.
Yeah,
throw parties. People walk downstairs in their house.
Anyone have any sponsorship ideas off the bat?
So are we going to have
George Webb?
Should we do like Def Con's got a black and white ball? Are we going to have like a Barcamp ball or something?
Barcamp ball.
Music time.
We could have a little party room. It sounds like from between Sam and David there. But as far as sponsorship, anybody have any great ideas besides obviously hitting the ones we had last time? You know, something like Lakefront Brewery, would they be willing to be a beverage sponsor or something?
It
started to.
Lakefront Brewers, probably. They might be able to get a discount on the tour on Friday.
No.
We're not doing it again.
Well, no.
That was great. I had a great time. We're not doing it again.
It was insane.
It just took too long?
Yeah, it took way
too long. No. I had another. We're just not doing the same thing.
Yeah, someone else, too.
Yeah.
But Lakefront Brewery is like involved in Flickr now, and they're like hosting Flickr meetups there, and they've got their own groups and shit. They're kind of into it, so who knows? They might be someone to hit up. I mean, last year I emailed everyone from...
They could have headline sponsorship on the t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I emailed them
directly. Barcamp has a beer company as its headlining sponsor.
But I mean, I emailed all sorts of people. I had someone from, say, oh, I know someone at Pepsi, from Pepsi who's interested, but I didn't hear back from. I didn't hear back from, like, three or four different, like, beverage companies saying, like, you know, give us a couple cases of juice or soda.
We were supposed to get press sponsorship last year, and I just got to hit him up again because he said he was going to get us some of that sweet cucumber soda.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's really good.
The pizza soda last year, I talked to them.
It tastes like cucumber soda.
It's good. But honestly, if there's like a, you know, any company in the area who does whatever, you know,
And well, I would be interested in being a sponsor.
And a coffee? I mean, even something like something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, there's...
We had coffee last time.
Right, there was one guy who came and said, yeah, my friend runs this Rochambeau coffee and tea shop in, you know, on the east side. And he said, he'll kick in coffee Sunday morning. Like, cool, he's a sponsor. You know, I mean, that's all it really took. So.
That's
kind of
run on a rocket.
He's a rocket man.
Yeah, Spazio's going to have coffee there, so I would talk to Brian before you have another coffee sponsor come in.
But okay. I mean, is it
sponsoring the coffee?
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the difference between paying $5 for
Please talk to Brian before you do something.
Why don't you talk to
Brian? I thought you let me in.
Well, okay. Here's,
I have to talk to Brian.
Well, here's the question then. Are there sponsorships we need to avoid or not to look at?
I have a contact with TDS. I'm trying to get banned with that one. He was close on Madison, but we'll see.
Yeah.
This is closer.
Well, who was TDS the Madison or Madison Connection?
No. Yeah.
Okay, because that Wallace Sheep guy, he's been pretty...
He was on top of his shit.
He was on top of it.
Yeah.
Oh, did he have a Wallace Sheep at Madison?
Yeah.
Yeah, the networking guy who was like... pretty much the conflict after the sentence, but technology wise. They were in wired so much shit. They were putting wired Wi-Fi routers everywhere, and bandwidth was impeccable. And at the end, you know, he pretty much did his presentation on why everything you do is insecure, which we all enjoyed.
Well, because we all did was open Wi-Fi. So.
Yeah,
we're planning our VPN solutions already for DEF CON. We'll go out there to Vegas. Checking your email is dangerous.
Yeah, we need to find out who wants to do a network topology for us.
Access points are just pretty good.
What's that?
I have Wi-Fi access points in the room. I just picked up with the one for free.
Yeah,
what
are the Milwaukee Wi-Fi?
What's that? What?
Is Milwaukee doing like
that? Yeah, we'll destroy it.
That's whatever, just what I'm on.
But
the government is really still in Milwaukee. I'm going to avoid them.
Not the government.
I can get you the phone over to Frank coming back if you want to talk to him, but
so Kevin, you can look at TDS? Possibly.
Yeah, I will talk to him.
And did Time Warner, we have anything there, any chance? Possibly.
Does someone have a contact? Because I have
Time Warner likes to say they will do
if you talk to Time Warner and say, well, we've got someone talking to TDS, is that going to be nice?
I've got two people on Time Warner right now.
I might want to just mention TDS. Because that might actually motivate them.
Yeah.
Tell them you got a projector.
And if they miss out, oh, sorry, guys. You know, TDS, because they can help us.
Yeah, just say pricing TDS, too, because they're
going to be here. I will get you the contact information that I ship with two other individuals, and you guys can go ahead.
It's bad. If TDS has a drop, if they have somewhere that they already have a drop built out, we'll be able to get it. If it's within, probably like 50 feet shorter than Cat 5 across the street.
Yeah.
Well, across the street is a gravel by.
Perfect.
Hey, I'll tell them pull.
Perfect. Yeah, that's only going to last for 8 minutes.
I got gaps. Gap up to pull.
See you later.
That's legal. I used to sell cable TV, so I got gaps. So I don't do both. Straight across the pole.
Perfect. I like this.
Good.
So as far going briefly back to the thing, are we
going to
be able to have any
sponsored
food, or is
Ozzy
going to
want to do more? We're totally going to be able to sponsor food. I'm just saying, okay. For coffee, please just talk to Brian first.
Okay, that's right. I just want to make sure that we have options for other things other than like muffins for dinner.
We're totally going to have sponsored food.
Okay.
With the coffee thing, I think it's fair to talk to Brian first.
That's fine. You only have to say one.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if they want to be a sponsor, and that could mean something like, you know, it's reduced price during the whole time of our camp, because there's how many people there who are going to want coffee, you know, I mean, obviously,
right.
We got to work together on that if we can.
And Brian's usually really flexible, it's just, I think it's fair.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I want to talk to him, actually. You want to do it?
To Brian?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right.
Give me his contact info when I'm talking to him. Not this second email.
Is that on the website?
Oh, yeah. What are we going to do about that? Are we just going to do one of your presentations?
Yeah. Blake, I have to talk to Blake, so we'll leave
that. Are you going to archive the content from last year? You should.
Yeah, you should just drop that in.
Sure.
Put it /2006.
Yeah, Wikimedia gets way too packed. It's just too annoying to keep Drupal, I think the performance on it is a lot better than Wikimedia.
The functionality one.
Oh, yeah. So, from what I've noticed with doing a lot of these sites, I think it's important on the front page and a couple of the other more important pages not to have them wikiized.
Or just lock them down.
Just to have a very clear delivery. And then on the other pages, you can have wikis enabled on those. It's just when you have like the domain name page is a wiki, the bot comes in, recognizes it, and then starts working its magic from there. And so I would not like to have a standard process to link to the wiki.
Yeah, I've completely given up on Barcamp Mass, and I tried to keep it clean for a while, but you know, whoever runs it, which I guess is kind of possibly gave up.
I think he's got a...
So it's like it's completely filled with spam right now.
Who's hosting?
It's got barcamp.milwaukee.com, that's your domain. So.
Okay. Yeah, I also bought barcamp.milwaukee2.com and I bought barcamp.midwest.com.
Okay, so are you hosting to the
I can do that. I think I can set up a Drupal server on Greenhost or I'll set up a server someplace else.
I did mention to Blake that Greenhost is where we ran last year, so.
I think it's fine. We'll just have to watch our Google Analytics on it to make sure that we're not getting over like 1,000 page views a day. Let's see, over 1,000 page views a day on Greenhost. It seems like performance is like crap.
Hope you bounce that. Hey.
At least with WordPress, like if you're on Drupal, maybe the performance is better because there's caching mechanisms built into it. But on WordPress, like hitting that MySQL database all the time to deliver stuff is horrible.
Of Drupal sites hanging around. I don't know who he uses for hosting, but I mean, he does some pretty big sites, so I think they just probably get some donations.
I might be able to get the site hosted on one of Manpower's servers.
Okay.
Do we want that or not? Do we want that?
It would be free, unlimited bandwidth, and
who controls
space.
It?
Yeah.
And I'm more concerned about control. I'll pay money if we have control.
Yeah. Right, I understand, but we're already doing this stuff for the second level.
Okay.
So I would just have additional space to do another site.
Alright, I just don't want someone that whatever company just turn it off one day. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't set it up in a situation where we don't control it.
Okay.
Alright.
Anything else? Any questions from the, I guess, newcomers who are confused as to what we're talking about?
We have a Yahoo group for the Barcamp planning, so join the Yahoo group.
Yeah, we'll put a post up on what forum for, kind of pointing to the mailing list, the Yahoo group, and whatever else we can. And I guess key people to get in touch with, or the mailing list is probably the best way to do that.
And then the only last thing we'll talk about is demo searching. So we're done with Barcamp.
Is anybody overwhelmed by the idea of
Barcamp?
Everybody's really quiet.
But we kind of did like the good and the bad. I didn't have big complaints about any bar camps they went to. I don't think most people come out with a negative, you know, review of it. It's just, you know, it's kind of what you make of it to some degree. So
Madison probably didn't start people enough. Like, I didn't feel like there was enough time to just.
Yeah.
Like, I was always worried about missing a session that I wanted to go.
It was a lot more spread out too, I think. So it was kind of with upstairs and downstairs and stuff. So, and there were more people in it. So.
Ken's very top down in the way he does stuff.
Yeah.
I think too there wasn't a good commentary like there was. There's just no central field, I think. Because even the big room was off and offshoot.
This next one will be fun. The new space is awesome.
Yeah,
I'm getting excited.
Very excited.
Before you get into the demo circuit, we did mention Drupal Camp as well.
Oh. Manpower was sponsored.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Because Jeremy was going to sponsor it. No.
Was it?
I don't know how much the sponsorship is yet, but all from the division I'm working in says, well, we need to get a whole bunch of Manpower employees to train at Drupal now that we're
really?
Using it.
Okay.
So if you guys are ready to do a Drupal camp or something, we're willing to sponsor it.
And honestly, yeah, well, that's good. Blake actually sent up. Lake Holly in Madison actually set up a site for, I guess, Wisconsin Drupal Camp or whatever it was going to be. We kind of saw it as a smaller event one day, probably not as huge as like a bar camp thing, because it's kind of more specific. There was interest. We never really nailed down a date or got any further than that, but there's definitely interest.
I'm fine as long as the date's not obvious.
All right. Well, I would think, I mean, at this point, I think we do it after bar camp.
Yeah, sure.
Milwaukee.
Maybe early December.
Yeah, and obviously bar camp could generate a lot of interest in it, and it sounds like we have a possible sponsor already, too, so.
I think they're going to want to sponsor it before December.
Yeah, well, obviously. Yeah, well, so, winter. Before the end of the year.
We'll have to coordinate that. I think, I don't know how soon the sponsorship is going to have to be. They might want to
get... How soon they have to spend their money?
No, it's not that. They basically want to use it to train their employees.
Okay.
So they kind of probably have a deadline set aside for that.
Okay.
I don't know when that is yet.
Well, and obviously if it's a smaller, just a one-day event, I could see it happening shortly after.
Yeah, like
or before.
2 or 3 weeks after.
Yeah, yeah.
Ride the buzz on.
Yeah.
Well, I figure if it happened on Saturday, we'd just put it as one of the tech cafes or place that is a tech camp. Drupal camp.
I don't mean like I really want to focus on Drupal if you're going to do it.
Right.
If you do it in
Wattown,
my site
would
be ready to go live too. So.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was just saying. You're saying implement agent with
just do, if you do it on a Saturday, we'll do it at Buckworks, like you don't have to worry about location.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you've got the sponsorship lined up, you've got the location lined up.
Plus the manpower's right next to Buckworks.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
So that whole process is it's really
a
easy
big
to grow it. And then if we're gonna have food, like I'm sure manpower would pay for the food and
yeah, that'd be pretty much self-sponsorship.
Right, so I
would
think there's room real planning for the event. So it's just pretty much getting people there.
I totally agree.
So,
and getting a basic track.
Right.
And probably having a little more structure.
All right, well, someone should definitely talk to Blake about what we just did here.
Right.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to him anyway. So.
Okay.
So then demo circuit, the idea behind that is... get 5 or 6 companies up there that are starting up or have an interesting project that they're working on. Show what they're doing. The general rule throughout the coasts is no PowerPoint, but in my observation of the Midwest, if you tell people no PowerPoint, they get up there and throw their thumb and they don't want to see the initial PowerPoint anyways. So I think in the Midwest, what will work is 5 minutes of PowerPoint, and then you have a 10-minute window to demo stuff. So if you want to use a full 5 minutes for PowerPoint, you can, and then you'll have an additional 5 minutes of demo. But the whole point of these demo camp ideas is that you're showing working software. And it's just a way to have entrepreneurs and developers kind of celebrate the activity that's going on in the area. I've already got sponsors lined up for Demo Circuit in Milwaukee and in Chicago. And so the idea is that these projects, both in Milwaukee, Chicago, Madison, and Minneapolis, you get a chance to see a flavor of what's going on through the IQ corridor. And so the speakers would rotate between locations, and then the event would rotate between locations. So that's kind of the basic idea between them.
So there's a software development company? What exactly is
free drinks for the first 50 to 75 people, and then some software demos or technology demos. So Gabe at one point had said that he's interested in building an electric car. If at some point he had an electric car to demo, Demo Circuit could be the place to demo it.
Okay. So technology more than just software.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with manufacturing technique. Or
perpetual motion machine.
Hmm?
Perpetual motion machine.
Right. Like if you came up with that would be fantastic.
So it's just showing off whatever cool thing you're working on.
Right. Showing off is the key. Not talking about what it will or won't do.
Yeah, something actually works and functions. Okay.
So right now the only thing we need for the first demo circuit is speakers. So I got 2 or 3 people that I can draw from.
I got somebody else.
Cool. So Kevin, I was working with Kevin. Kevin's going to be doing the site for it. And I'll have a little form for speakers to submit. you know, their name, their contact info, their company, and the product they're going to demo. So I can have a free file and I can try and line up those things.
So, does it have to be a product? Does it have to be a product?
I'm just calling it a product. Okay. Or the thing, a rejigger, a software, what, I don't know.
Okay.
Any usable item.
Anything you can demo.
Okay.
Someone wants to demo a new top thing.
Just call it show and tell.
Demo circuits more brandable.
Bring my chia pet.
Yes, bring your chia pet. So is it, how is it, like 2 hour event, 3 hour in the evening, weekdays, weekends?
It's typically a 2 hour event. The networking will be in kind of one room with food and drink, and then in the other room you'll have your presentations, your demos going on. When I went to the one in Minnesota, they had 250 people at the event, and the first 100 people I think got free drinks, and that was all paid for by sponsors.
Anyone go to the Tech Cocktail in Chicago?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Is this good? Good one or bad one?
I didn't go to the more recent Tech Cocktail 5. I went to 4, 3, 2, and 1. So, Tech Cocktail is amazing.
Those
guys are syndicating their model to DC and I think into the Valley. So I might be able to get them to kind of throw a Tech Cocktail in Milwaukee.
And how is that different than the circuit?
There's no demo of software at Tech Cocktail, it's just drinking.
What is this? It's
a demo room.
The one that was in the NBC show, I can't remember what number that was. 3?
Tech Cocktail 4.
So it's 4? Okay. They have demos there.
Right, but nobody was really looking at the demos. Everyone was pretty much drinking.
Well, what is the Madison?
No, that was 3. What?
What does Madison have, though? They have something similar, right?
Madison has Accelerate Madison.
Okay.
But generally with the Accelerate Madison and Innovate are kind of brother-sister organizations. And so the idea is you get a big keynote and then people drink and eat before and after.
Well, Madison has one like that. It's called High Tech Happy Hour.
Oh, that's,
yeah,
that's
High Tech Happy Hour.
Okay. Yeah. Have you been to it? Okay.
Yeah.
Is it? Is it similar to the other events that you mentioned?
It's like that Tech Cocktail. It's just drinking.
Okay. Networking kind of thing.
Milwaukee has those. They call them Water Street on
Friday. Yeah. Minus the tap room.
Anything else?
Yes.
Can I plug my event real quick?
Of course.
Yeah.
Why are we here?
December 1st, I hold an event every year. It's called the Corporate Party. And between now and then, we're going to be making a bunch of videos. It's not really tech-related, but we're using a bunch of tech to make a bunch of videos. So we're going to shoot stuff. So if anyone who wants to participate, Johnny's in it. Justin's in it. We have a great time. And then in the first, we have a big party. Basically, everybody gets together. You dress business formal. You pretend like it's an office party. And then we have the videos and some stuff. So if anyone's interested, have some paraphernalia here. And you can check out some stuff.
Speaking of that, maybe we should do a mini film festival at
Park
Camp
Milwaukee. We can shoot and edit on site? At the
no, I'm thinking we should have people, you know, create films and we show them at Park Camp.
James is involved.
Tell Ross to get the word out, right?
Which one? The Milwaukee kind of film festival? Or
I know,
he
runs
one
of the high school teachers. Or Rose King or something. The shepherd or something.
I know that we had talked about this, doing this at Madison, about how there were a lot of sessions that I really wanted to go to, but I couldn't. And we talked about giving them
like encore presentations or reruns, kind
of. Or I mean, just getting that information somehow online, whether it's or audio or whatever.
Yeah, obviously we kind of promote the openness and sharing and publishing. I know in Madison there was a guy who showed off a really simple app he wrote, you know, using some Ajax stuff, and I said, you know, can we download this? And he said, yeah, I guess I could like put it up, but I mean, honestly, you should think about that beforehand. Anything you're going to be showing, demoing, talking about, it'd be great to have your notes or slides online, either on your own blog or the Barcamp wiki site or wherever. But yeah, if you can publish anything you do, that's obviously a good thing.
Do you want to have a file upload spot so that everyone can upload their presentation? And
I mean,
I don't just want an email account.
Hmm?
We have an email account, so we can clean the names up.
Clean the names up? Or?
Well, if everyone sends their presentation, we can develop some good naming syntax. You know, you've got...
Oh, just send it to, like, some email address at Google or whatever,
yeah,
and then...
Yeah, so you have Pete's PowerPoint, PPT, and you change it to...
I was
going to
do file upload form.
Okay.
I mean, would that be built into Wiki?
Yeah, it's built into Drupal to have a file upload.
Just the security thing would be a question.
If they're registered users, I think it's okay.
Well, anybody can register.
All right,
well, then anyone we promote.
Yeah.
But if there's something that we can easily, like how we have it on the wiki, I know a lot of people wanted to connect their Flickr photos to their presentations and take pictures, and we're just going to put the link out like they were through, but and we're going to put the link on their specific page for their session. I mean, even something like that.
Well, S5 can convert to from PowerPoint.
I don't think so.
No?
No.
Well, you can export PowerPoint as PNGs.
Yeah.
Or as a website. So maybe we just tell people to do that.
What the hell is PowerPoint? No.
Bastards.
You're on your own. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
We're trying to make it accessible for you.
Yeah.
Doesn't OpenOffice's version of PowerPoint allow you to export it in Flash?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even if you, you know, put some PowerPoint presentation on, I could probably find something to open it. So.
You know, there is that new site now that allows you to share PowerPoint files.
Is it open source?
Yes. So you can
you download it.
You are
free,
aren't
you?
On the Mac?
It's like share.
Really?
So you put the latest version. It's just like the Windows one, I just assume.
Really? You're saying I'm wrong.
I'll put your PowerPoint to it.
Like, give me your laptop.
A video to YouTube, and then I'll yeah, okay.
So is there a tag that we should use for all our BarCamp
Walkie 2? BarCamp Walkie 2? For tagging things? BarCamp Walkie 2, I would think.
No, is that the number 2 or T-O-O?
I don't know.
The number
the,
2.
According to BarCamp.org, no. You do the number 2.
Numeral.
The numeral 2 after the name.
Yeah.
And so that's if we were going to call the BarCamp Milwaukee again.
Mm-hmm.
We did that. Now, Chicago broke from that. They're calling it, they did a subdomain of like 2007.barcampchicago.com.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, you see that at a lot of conferences, so I think.
Would we rather do that?
I'm sure we're going to have them each year. We're only going to have them once a year, then. I don't know.
That's fine.
As long as we just do 1 year, we're fine.
Well, I mean, some cities have started having bar camps quarterly, some cities have had it biannually, you know.
And this 2007.2.
Yeah. Let's just hit our bar camp one, too.
Yeah.
All right.
That works.
And then well, that's the benefit of having a consistent domain name.
Yeah,
the publicity you did last year can carry over on the links you have to carry over.
In SEO.
You
know, so do we want to use barcampmilwaukee.com?
Yeah.
There's a benefit to it. Whether you
absolutely.
There's a benefit to it.
Yeah, we certainly do that and, you know, point to
the
archive.
Then we want to have a mod rewrite that takes any URL that comes into BarCamp Milwaukee and funnels it to our base.
Again with the phone!
Oh
my god.
What time is it?
John, is that something you'd recommend us doing?
For publicity purposes, having a consistent domain account.
That's true.
From year to year. Especially if there is going to be a quarterly or semi-annually or special events or
free
publicity or anything.
You can get a list of, MediaWiki can give you a list of like every page on the site. It should be easy enough to generate a list
and there should
that
be a strategic plan for the future for this. You know, to get a consistent URL for every piece of content so that it could be valid, you know, in about
well, I could archive, like
that would be a lot easier to do the Drupal load.
I don't assume any technology lasts beyond 2 years, but...
What? Don't think it lasts beyond 2 years?
No.
Our nomenclature can, maybe not so long.
2 years is an infinite amount of time in computers. But, so like, if we were to take BarCamp Milwaukee, and that's like the front page, and then we did like Q3 07, that would be the next part.
I'd do 2007 because you're going to run into problems when you're
right,
out 3,000 cells.
In 3007?
Yeah.
Okay.
You need to think for the future.
Right. Okay.
Well, you laugh, but it's the same problem they had when back in the 80s with the huge 1,000 problem.
Right, because remember
sure,
running bar camps
out. I plan to.
Okay.
And,
so life extension for you, are you going to be the transhumanist?
I have a cyborg session on the meeting.
Are you going to be the transhumanist convention in Chicago?
No, I'm going to the time, I went to the time travel convention.
Did you?
So I took care of
that. I'm there right now. No, but I mean, I think we could just get all the URLs that are currently on barcampwatch.com and just do rewrites, my rewrite to whatever. It could be 2006.barcampwatch.com.
So they have a move page. If they come to the one URL, they can search it, or they say, if you're looking for 2006 barcamp, here's the front page to that.
So that's the plan then? We're going to keep it barcampwatch.com?
Yeah, I think so.
Mod rewrites.
I'd like to.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All right.
Can we get the? I'm sorry, I'm gonna interrupt. Can we get the information for?
Save my tuition money and turn the projector off.
Yeah.
Is the BarCamp group, is that public? Can everyone see the posts on that?
The.
I think last year I gave everyone the username and password through it, and then Pete got cranky, and I decided not to.
Or you just email.
Oh, no. I think you emailed the info to, like, FTP into Barcamp Milwaukee or something like that. Something
right.
like that. But the group should be open, I believe.
Yeah, the group's not open.
Yeah.
The Yahoo group?
Yeah. Anybody can read the archives or join.
All right, here's the number.
Very few.
Everyone who has a DreamHost account, let me know what DreamHost ID is, and then I can just add you to being able to edit that site.
Okay.
Right?
I'd say just let Blake get started on it.
I can consult Drupal.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I
just email Blake.
Blake's going to be the one configuring it most likely, but I can install.
Okay. Well, why don't you guys work it out before we open it to everybody?
Easy email address.
Okay.
All right. So, I don't know. Anything else? First timers, thanks for coming. Hope you come again. Hope you're at Barcamp Milwaukee.
Hey, Larry, can you bring some stuff from Microsoft this year to SmartCamp?